Hello and welcome to
The Heart of Healing Show.
I'm your host, Natasha Slayton.
And I'm your co-host, Sophie Starr.
Join us each week as we explore the magic of alternative healing modalities, what they are, how they work, and the parts that have helped us.
We'll be interviewing world-renowned healers and experts within different fields,
all the while sharing personal stories of pain and perseverance. So tune in to tap into your true potential and learn with us as we dive into a world of possibilities.
Have some laughs.
And some cries. And ultimately, get to the heart of healing.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Heart of Healing Show.
Yay!
Today, I'm so excited. We are talking about art as therapy as a modality, and specifically how to navigate some things like grief, relationships, all sorts of issues that can be treated through art as therapy. And we have artist extraordinaire and my friend, Sam Yesigi, here from Columbus, Ohio, to talk with us today.
Hello!
Hello!
Hi, Sam. I'm super stoked. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I cannot wait to like pick your brain today and for everybody to get to hear like about art as therapy, because I think one of the things to kick this off is I know art can be so broad, and how do we know the difference? Like, what is the difference between art as a hobby, art as a pastime, and art as therapy? Or is there a difference? Is all art therapeutic?
I think that if it has to be one way or the other, art is always therapeutic. It comes from mystical backgrounds, like before language, there were pictures. So I think that it's more than just expressive. It is therapeutic. And in terms of needing it to be inside of a specific realm for it to register as art or therapy, I think that's where this particular modality is exciting, because it's left up to a few devices between the practitioner and the patient and the materials at hand. Mm.
Do you have to be an artist to create art?
Nope. I mean, if we break down that sentence, artist, one thing that is, I think, stuck in some people's heads when they think I'm not an artist is they have this massive weight of art history, this idea of there are people that master art, like they're wielding some type of unruly thing. And if you don't feel like that's your approach, then you can just feel like there should be no approach. I also think that there's this idea that you have to be a starving artist. You have to be this kind of like derailed, passionate person, or in the throes of making art, you have to be like either super chaotic or super peaceful. I think it works better when you're not an artist, when you're working with materials to either create something, literally objectify something, or just to see something outside of your head. There's no reason why you have to have some type of gatekeeper green light tell you that you're an artist.
What defines being an artist to you?
Oh, thanks for asking. That's one of my favorites to have worked on in my life after a long time, because much the same as like sort of what you posed earlier, the idea of like, well, who gets to be an artist? My idea now of being an artist, and I've held fast to it for a while, is someone who problem solves with materials. So, and now what I'm learning is, and they can recall that in non-artistic moments, and they can go back to it maybe as a creative outlet. For example, like my uncle is an amazing electrician. That's not art materials, but he problem solves with those materials, and he takes the same steps that someone trying to render an apple would take in great regard. He's asking the materials what they will and won't do for him. He's starting with what he already knows. He's willing to have the materials show him what a mistake is. And it's a creative outlet, because at some point, whether he's done it well or not, he has organized something for his own intention, and probably color coded it.
That's such a great point, because it's like anything
can be an art. And in that way, we're all artists, whether we acknowledge it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100% for sure. And what I learned like on the first day of going to art school was you're unique like everybody else. And good luck. Half of you won't be here by Christmas. That was the opening. And so that to struggle with being like, when does art happen? When did I start making art? When did I start having therapy because of that art? I mean, going to art school didn't change who I was. I mean, it helped me understand how much I can do inside of an hour. It introduced me to so many different materials, but I realized that it's usually everybody's going through the same cycle of fear and acceptance of what comes out of that, whether you went to art school or you're having a communion with your body with a type of intention.
Mm. When we talk about art in the way that I think so many of us typically think of art, like in that sense, how can maybe the average person who doesn't consider themselves an artist, or at least not before this conversation, how can that type of person cultivate art as a therapy into their lives? And what is art therapy even?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, I mean, just where my brain goes first is if you're trying to do like a thing that's very accessible, so to speak, low end, it's like those paint and sip classes where you and your girlfriends want to relax and then you want to like create something that you can take with you that is a bit of a memory. And you also do get to like forget about who's allowed to work with certain materials. You get to have someone else kind of instruct you to a certain point and leave you alone. The highest end of that, of like who gets to do this, what is this, is in my mind, like people that have lost the right to be in society, but there's still something there that shouldn't be punished. And the ability to make art as someone who is no longer allowed to be a part of society, that to me is like my scale of like, very accessible to kind of a painful use of art therapy. Mm. And art therapy in my mind is not something that you have to have an outside practitioner for. Whereas, talk therapy, usually you have a semantic difference explaining something to a therapist, getting it out of your head, than, you know, if you were by yourself, where you ask, like, how can people incorporate art therapy into their lives? I mean, it's about seeing where your creative outlets already are. One of my favorite examples is my closest friend. We met in art school, and then years later she became a pharmacist. And when she was inside of pharmacy school, there's not a lot of time to have a creative outlet, and you're around some people that either don't recognize that they have one already, don't think it's necessary, or they certainly aren't talking about it, you know. But she comes from art school, and so her notes were famous inside of her group because they were color coded. They were, it was just a beautiful rendering of their information. And she applied her necessity basically to learn this information, but she refused and couldn't be a non-artistic conduit for that information. So, I think that she was capable of understanding that that's her creative outlet. That's a form of art therapy for her. It was art therapy for her for many reasons, but because she wasn't giving up, so to speak, on this other necessity that she has to corral information in a way that's aesthetically pleasing.
Mm, that's such a good example, Sam, and reminds me of something that you've really taught me, in that art doesn't have to be, I don't have to have this finished product in mind. Like, art can just, my life can be a work of art. And I can use, as you always say, the materials at hand. If I'm using them in a way that works for me, that's art therapy. So, I mean, in that sense, would you consider even other modalities forms of art therapy from that perspective?
I know that, my like original background and just even knowing that art therapy was a thing and not even knowing what it was is my father is a Vietnam veteran. And then when he would go to these counseling sessions, there was a woman who told him, gave him basically a physical prescription of how to remove himself from the post-traumatic reaction of being a minesweeper and to go out and hunt arrowheads. And so my father spent so much time with my brothers and himself going out and doing the same act that would result in something fatal and terrifying. And it would be rewarding. It would be soothing. He would have his hands in the earth. He'd be able to be outside. He could be alone with it. And I mean, for someone that's always looked at my dad and been like, how can I make you more peaceful? Especially as a child, that was like the first person I remember being truly envious of, because they figured out a way to give relief to someone I love. And I was in awe of that. So my idea of art therapy has nothing to do with historically acknowledged materials or even a sense that you're storytelling, you know, even that you're there is no main character, you know, there you are taking a less hostile path through your mind, and you can apply that journey to other places. For me, like, I don't necessarily consider what I do now when I'm making my work to be my art therapy. I do, like, I got to cross train. I got to switch it up. I got to do like either a totally scary material where I'm like, you're going to make a fool out of yourself and you're not going to be able to go from point A to point B without problem solving and without managing your ego and looking for one result and finding another. And for me, sometimes that's like learning a sport, whether as like a audience member or a participant, because it's like, that's hard for me to do. Rules aren't like exactly what I want to like adhere to. But I understand why someone who wouldn't ever have considered themselves an artist shy away from something that is being told to them as art therapy, or just even breaking their confidence, like just like setting themselves up to maybe feel not confident, is the hardest part of therapy.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So if you feel like you're about to do that, you're probably about to do some therapy.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends that will just say like, oh, I'm not creative in any way, because they're not thinking of themselves as like the actor that they are, or the singer, or the dancer, or the, you know, the corporate person that they are. And it's like, you're an artist in your own way. So of course you are, but I understand that you might want to paint or make jewelry or like draw, and you feel like you can't because you don't have those skills. So like, what would you say to someone in that position where it's like, you know, they feel like they can't do this? Or even like for me, well, I mean, maybe that's another story, but like Okay.
Yeah.
Well, like for me, I used to draw and paint and make jewelry, like hand beaded woven jewelry all of the time. And I feel like a lot of, you know, maybe I've run out of time, or maybe, you know, it's been so long that like I just won't dive back in because I'm like, okay, this is going to be, I'm a little rusty. You know what I mean? But for me, I did it a lot and then kind of stopped right when I started. I went through this like crazy wild breakup and was confronted with all of these things that I had never had to deal with before this time. And in that I started drinking and I started experimenting with drugs and like all this crazy shit. And after that, it was kind of like art was pushed way under the rug. And even trying to attempt to go back to it is just like, I don't know where to start. I don't even think I can.
Yeah, I think that that's natural to be intimidated by at least the previous time that you felt successful doing art was, I mean, it's sounding like the last time you were like, I'm making art was when you were a child.
Was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Or like, I know a little bit about your career. Like you manifested a singing career beyond an acting career. So you were able to change creative outlets. And that's one thing that I would switch up for someone when they're like, well, I'm not an artist. It's, well, you know, what's your creative outlet right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it's the concept of taking something that has to be done one way for it to be successful and then allowing there to be forks in the road that you can foresee or not and being like, I'm going to be able to start out anything, a painting, another necklace, another singing group, like whatever it is that you want to start out, it's your creative outlet, it's your birthright to examine what would make you feel so turned on about just the fact that you cannot plagiarize anyone. It still comes through your hand. So you can't plagiarize yourself and you're worried about plagiarizing like the person of 10 years ago being like, well, I'm just scamming her, you know, but you're like a completely new person, totally deserving of sitting down with, I mean, if you're attracted to it, even in a competitive way with your former self, where you're like, yeah, I still make necklaces. I still make jewelry. Yeah. And then you sit down there and you're like, I could have never done this 10 years ago. A good example of this just in my personal life is I recently got a job opportunity where I was going to become an instructor at a clay studio. And the person that is my friend and gave me this job, he starts off his demo for the classes saying, I've been doing this for 17 years. You know, and that's to like, be like, you know, I might make this look easy, but I've had a lot of experience. And for me, I hadn't done this. I hadn't touched a wheel in 17 years. And it was a miserable experience because I couldn't center clay. I couldn't calm myself. I couldn't care. I wasn't a three-dimensional thinking person. And I had really only had a couple years at best, with myself manipulating other materials and being able to calm my brain and be like, what does this material want? You know? And so I sat down to center this clay 17 years later. And I was like, damn, like that's what 20 years of participating with yourself on a intellectual, existential, physical level. It's like anybody that's like, oh, well, I can't do that because I haven't done it in a really long time. It's like, you've been working. There's no latency period. If you're using your hands and you're using your brain, I mean, if you're just like washing up after a kid all day, like your brain is not idle, mm-hmm. and your hands are not idle, and you're solving problems and you're making these assumptions about what would be a great way for my actions to unfold. And I mean, just back to the idea of me now whipping up these pots, it's like, I can like feel it being like, well, damn, like I really have had 20 years of experience with myself not even touching this material, and that's what did it, you know?
Mm. So in that sense, it's like really art as therapy, you know, to give like, if to give a general statement about it, art as therapy is like problem solving with
100%.
With any material.
Yeah, like my dad didn't want to be scared anymore, you know, and he was scared of having these nightmares, you know? And he was like, you know, you got to, like, what we learned in art school was you're making your passion your focus, you know? And it's hard to make your trauma your focus. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if you're already at the point where you're like, something's got to give, I need relief in my life. What am I already doing when nobody else is looking? Like, character is what you do when no one's paying attention. Like, mm-hmm. creative outlets happen when no one's asking you to do something well, but you're doing it right in a way that, you know, like putting the dishwasher together. One of my favorite, like, just like, for real. But I mean, that's like, if you're not giving yourself credit on those levels, then of course you're just going to be like, I don't deserve to solve my big problems. You know, like, you know, you need confidence. It's confidence building. And there's nothing better about building confidence than shutting yourself down. That version of yourself that's just like, other people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this phantom idea of like, I can't incorporate that because it would take all day, or I would have to sit down and do an entire bracelet. Or, I mean, it's about shutting up with yourself sometimes, and just be willing to, I mean, it is meditative, you know. I am not one to be able to sit down and be with Sam and like have that mind, body, and soul. I need like people to force that situation on me, but where I am my own primary patient and I'm the practitioner of my own art therapy. I mean, you gotta make yourself uncomfortable in safe ways. And, and there's nothing more safe than, just paint on paper. Even if you, I mean, to get like graphic, I mean, like there's people that are in a lot of pain and they make it appear on the outside of their body. Mm-hmm. And you got to have a safer way to get that out. And I think that, you know, that's where the sense of like a therapist is like a bit of a psychiatrist, because you're going to give some form of a prescription. Mm-hmm. You're not giving over a chemical, composition over to this person's brain, but like you're letting their brain get some dopamine, create some like really necessary pathways of confidence that they can draw back on, or it exposes them to like something that makes them feel super frightfully like just not have any aptitude towards it. And it's mm-hmm. like, maybe you need that, you know, like maybe the power focused person needs to like just watch something fall apart for a minute and be like, okay, that's okay.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So my favorite question. Part.
No, go for it.
Go for it.
Oh, my favorite part is the prescription part of it, because that's what I saw that woman do for my dad, being like, you're terrified of this. Let me replace that same thing and make it safe for you. And I mean, that was the most astute observation of anyone I've ever really witnessed. And in art school, they do it much the same. They're like, here's your gap. Like, we're going to try to get you from here to there. And basically you're lacking the confidence of being like, there's someone out there that's either doing it like me, and that green lights it. Like, okay, there's like a landing pad there. Or you realize that no one is going to do it like you. And so a teacher would be like, look at this artist, and they would just leave it with you. Or they would be like, this artist is an asshole, and then leave that with you. And you'd be like, well, I feel like I'm like them, you know? And then you just have to be like, wow, well, they're one of the masters. But like, whatever kind of like ego stroke that needs to happen, or ego devolvement that needs to happen, it's therapy because it's happening in a safer place. Same stuff, safer place.
There was one particular part where you were talking about, if you're not sort of acknowledging yourself along the way, there's no way that you can like go toward solving the bigger problems. Yeah. And I forget who I was listening to. There was something I heard somewhere, and it was just like, you've got to learn to acknowledge the small, tiny things you do in the day that like took something. It took courage. It took time. Yeah. It took thought. It took you just deciding to like, yeah, it's just like you deciding to take that next step. And like, if we don't acknowledge that, then we can't even get to those bigger things. And like, basically, like what I'm getting from so much of what you're saying is that art therapy is not just about a, you know, taking a pen to a piece of paper and drawing a portrait or, you know, whatever you might have in your idea of what art is. Like, art is really the way that you live life.
I feel like if you're having a good time, you're feeling like you're doing a really good job of wagering what you can control and what you can't control. And, you know, you spend the most amount of time with yourself. Like my parents are really just sort of self-serving people on a peace level. I mean, I watched it not get there, but like, or get there with a struggle, but like they want peace. And they the way that they wanted me to find peace is by knowing that I'm going to be with myself the whole way through. So if I can't be with myself, it's sort of like when you're like, oh, when you're in a relationship and you just be in the car together, not even say a thing, but it's like, can you do that with yourself? Do you realize if you can't do that with yourself, you're in kind of like a fucked up relationship? Like if you like, don't talk to yourself very well, you know, if that inner dialogue is hostile when no one is antagonizing you, That's your existence. You need proof of life. Like, then you really need to be like, what am I when no one is listening? And so like the way you talk to yourself when you're like cutting an onion or something is like, you got to start there. You got to be like, I love the color of this onion. My tears are so hot against my cheeks. Like get dramatic with it, you know, like just be like, man, what's like, what can I like really chew on in this moment where I feel like it's made of nothing? It's just made of toil. Because my work, like I forced myself to toil. And that's like, I mean, who knows what that is, you know, but like, but I mean, a lot of people are toiling all day long and then they're like, well, not me. I don't relax. Or not me. I can't bear to do another thing for myself. It's like you're probably already doing it and you're just not giving yourself credit that it's actually soothing or you're proud of yourself while you're doing it. I don't know. I mean, I think that I don't know if that totally answered your question. Not great at answering.
No, yes, okay. You are.
No, that's okay.
Catch me on the B side.
No, this is like one of the main reasons I wanted you to come on here, Sam, and like we both did, because you're just so good at like running the gamut and like really touching on. So it might be a specific question, but you might touch on it in a way that applies to 25 different people. So I feel like that's really important. But
that's sweet of you.
Yeah, I want to ask this in a way where I want to make sure you know that there's no pressure to share anything that you're not comfortable sharing. But I mean, talking about like Natasha mentioned, what we're learning from you is art as a way of life. But I know that, you know, art can treat, you know, or be therapeutic in specific instances in life as well. And I think some people question that. Like for me, I could think, well, how can art therapy help me with my divorce? And I know, you know, in your life, you've really come up against some heavy hitters, particularly recently. And I would, if there's anything you want to share about how art has been therapeutic in you through that process, or just your relationship to art throughout that process, I want to give you an opportunity to share that because I think a lot of people will relate.
Thanks. Yeah. So to clarify the background, my sister was diagnosed with cancer at the top of 2020, and that just went super fast. She died at the end of August. And then I was like a year later, it was the anniversary of her death. And I was like, I think I'm okay. Like, I think I can see how I can be okay. and I am zooming through a ton of information there. But then a month later, my dad died suddenly. And those two people were the people that were my protectors, always could center me, and were just like, they could see past what I could see. They could see my actual follow through. And so one of the ways, like just inside of those two losses, before my sister died, I had the opportunity to create a show with the Roy G. Biv Gallery in Columbus. And so it was marked in my calendar in October, and it was going to come to fruition in the following October. So one of the last like really cool conversations I had with my sister was, I was like, I've got this sculpture. I don't know how to like mount it. And my sister's an artist as well. So, you know, I got to problem solve with her and troubleshoot with her. And I started a painting that had like, you know, 10% of it done. And then I had to finish it while she died. And that painting just is a etching of her demise and me being like, gosh, I can't believe I have to see this through. It was like the first thing where I was like, this is a bridge between who I was and who I am being forced to become. And then at that art show, it was brilliant because it was during the pandemic, and it's like we were all able to be there with each other and to have this place where it was a happy, positive event. And one of the great final memories of like my family and that version being intact. And then since my father's passed, 6 months today, that's just the trickier thing. I was fortunate enough to have a friend who got me in the know of a grief group counseling here in Columbus. And, that was like basically the start of me being like, oh gosh, like you're going to like have to do something that you haven't done before. I've never participated in therapy like that. And I've never, I had to deal with a lot. And after I started being able to have a place to work that out where I could trust myself with my grief being addressed, I could get back to not producing art, but being myself again. And and being like, there's a lot to grieving where it's like, you just don't, the happy, cool times hurt the most because, for me, it's like, it's just like just the bittersweet recognition that like that time is not shared and in the same way. And you're still doing cool stuff. You might be doing the coolest stuff of your life and still looking at it and not hating it. You know, like looking at it and not being like cruel about the conditions it's been created under, you know, that's tough, you know. So back to like someone pursuing art therapy after trauma or because they're trying to pursue some type of clarity about like a relationship ending, and you know, Sophie's divorce in my mind, and we've spoken about it, is, you know, I had a contract with my sister that we were going to become old together, and that contract was broken. And we had a friendship contract, which was, you're going to let me be there when you die, right? And that was broken. Cancer infantilized her, and the gatekeepers of her sickness were, they weren't letting me in on that stuff. So I had to, that was bewildering to be like, I was promised unconditional love and that got snatched away from me like a divorce. And when it came to my dad, he's my best friend. We talked more than once a day. I mean, and so the conversations that we had about death, just on any level, philosophical or physical, were in depth and lively and had a lot of levity to it. But I mean, we had a big agreement of what I was going to do. I mean, I was supposed to cut off the top of his pinky to make sure he was dead. And what? Then I get in there and I'm like, you're dead, dude. So it's like, even in the smallest, banal, like fun-making kind of things, I was just like, I didn't get what I was promised. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad, I mean, I had always thought of me being like at my dad's bedside, being like, I'm the one that can handle that, like Chaz and the Royal Tenenbaums or something, like just watching it all go down in the ambulance. It's like, I wanted that. I thought that I deserved that. That's what we were working towards. And he did not let me know that day. He left his phone at home, a very curious event. You know, and I mean, working through being like, well, that didn't go as planned. Why didn't I get what I wanted? Why didn't they give me what I deserved? Why wasn't my sister capable? Like, what good was that? I mean, that's tough to get back to a place where you're like, I'm going to examine that. You mm-hmm. know, you have to, because, some of the kind of things that have been stuck in my mind is, you know, I'm one of the living, they're not. I can't make my life about their deaths. They wouldn't have ever chosen that. And though, I mean, I would love to trade them sometimes, I think they would just be like, that's ludicrous. So I'm here and I'm still trying to figure out if high functioning is, you know, beneficial sometimes. But one thing that's been sort of like a trap of being an artist is when all of this stuff occurs, they're like, there's people that'll be like, oh, you'll be fine because you have your art. Mm. And I'm like, that's like super confusing sometimes because that's like, I mean, what I can say about my art in terms of my professional commercial career is I trust myself to be in a creative place my whole life. I'm going to perform that creativity. I'm going to ebb and flow with my appreciation of that as something I need to do a little or a lot of, whether I'm actually working. I know I'm working. I trust myself with my art.
Mm-hmm.
Don't trust myself with like my anger or my grief or my sense of betrayal with some of these deaths. You know, because I didn't choose to be this version of me. So I'm at odds with like accepting her. And so to give her my art, to give her that tool, this new Sam is, it's not the same. I mean, I trust myself with the art of it. I don't necessarily personally trust myself yet with the therapy of it. But what's cool is I have this gig working with a new material where I don't have the luxury of thinking of it as my art. It's it's what I need to learn to become an instructor. And those other people are, that's not my material either, you know? So I have to go through all the process. For me, it's like a reverse thing. I have to go through all the processes of making art without it being art.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a process that helps me in my grief problem solving. Whereas, I mean, another person who doesn't consider themselves an artist, but really needs to get some heavy lifting done I would suggest that they do something with materials in some way, you know?
Sure.
I am so sorry for your losses, first and foremost, especially such like recent losses. I think it's like just really beautiful how you're continuing to show up for yourself even though you're not really sure what that's fully supposed to look like. And I think to speak to everything you've been saying thus far, it's like not only navigating this new, basically, life, that's an art in and of itself, but also, you know, just continuing to show up for yourself through the little steps, like through the still, like not giving up on yourself and continuing to use your physical art as a tool or however it's going to unfold before you to be able to like heal, even though you're still figuring out what that looks like for you. When you're creating, have you ever felt like you've lost a little bit less of a sense of your purpose, only in the sense that you aren't able to share with them in the physical form?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, I mean, it's beyond a bummer to have started that show with the knowledge my sister wasn't going to see it.
She did, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she did in so many ways. And, you know, she was infused in that work in a way that would have never been possible without her passing. And so I think the grief totally gave me an identity crisis. and I'm still working on it, because who am I when I don't have the ability to be theirs?
Same.
In the same way. My dad said this thing a long time ago. It was after the first college boy disappointed me. And I was like, you know, what's going on here? He's like, relationships never end. They just change nature. And it's your responsibility to make sure that you're in the right nature of a relationship with each person, you know? And so my relationship with my sister and my dad haven't ended. They've just changed nature. They still are very present tense for me. And when I realize that I'm really close to my sister is when I'm, you know, doing much the same as like troubleshooting. How is this material going to react when I need it to be finished? You know, where I'm just like, oh, that follow through stuff. Mm-hmm. And that confidence in being like, I brought it this far, and the tough parts right now, I'm gonna continue.
I just think you're doing an incredible job. So I just want to acknowledge that.
I mean, if you're here right now, you've done an amazing job bearing with that, both of you. I mean, those are the kind of things that just can really total you for a while. And I think speaking to the idea of like, wow, I tried going back to the things that gave me, that lit up my brain, that made me feel super confident and proud. It's like, that exactly makes sense. You know, you're just like, you want to feel like yourself again. You want to get back to a version of yourself that's at least familiar. And so you're going to grasp at that memory you have of being successful and taking care of yourself. And it's super difficult when that doesn't pan out, because then you're just like, oh, okay. So I just, is there any course of action for me to feel powerful again? And something that I've said before about art as therapy is, you know, you get to create the problem and solve it. You get to create the puzzle and then solve it. And when you feel like helpless, because life is heaping a bunch of direction on you and identity theft, and you're just like, I am like really not secure right now. You have to feel powerful again. And so you want to start some problems that you can solve. And sometimes mm-hmm. that's, I mean, I think I've like spoken before, but it's like, that could be a paint by number. You could use other mm-hmm. people's pain ideas, and that could be painting inside of another person's lines. Right. But that is you manifesting something from point A to point B that could have never gotten to point B unless you were involved.
You
are the reason why something is no longer in its first condition. And the idea of like leaving something better than when you found it, I mean, you eventually are going to realize that like your most prized material is yourself. And the thing that you need to pay attention to, like how you're shaping this, who's embossing onto you and stuff, like what environment are you trying to like grow this thing. It's like you can, you have to create an environment that helps these like other dumber materials where you're like, okay, I can't not take care of this paint because it'll dry out and then blah, blah, blah. You know, I can't not take care of my brushes because then I can't make the correct mark. And then, I mean, then you start realizing that like the tools around you just to make something that cannot exist without you happen. I think whether it's conscious or subconscious or not, you're starting to climb your way out of feeling like everything in your life is happening to you rather than
for you.
You have something. Yeah, you get to do this. You don't have to do this. You get to do this. You have a bunch of I have to's around you, but then you carve out this one space for I get to do this. And that could be, I mean, I heard recently that self-care isn't taking a bubble bath and putting a mask on. It's like sitting down and making an Excel sheet about your budget.
Either one.
Either one. You can wear the mask while you do the spreadsheet. But what I hear in that is doing the thing that you're like, this makes me feel powerless because it's something I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people want to do the thing that they have to do that is, you know, not being prioritized by anyone else. Sometimes, like, you got to ask yourself, like, what am I avoiding that is, like, really going to just set me free? Mm. And my dad used to say this thing. He's like, you can be totally screwed, but just do one smart thing every day, and then you can just fuck off for the rest of it. Most likely, you're probably not, because you're going to be like, zipping through inspired. Things, but if you just give yourself one mark to make, like I mean, I'm looking right now at a painting behind me, and it's like the idea of like with grief, where it's like if I mean, you don't have to get out of bed, but like if you open your eyes, you're there, you're good, you're like, and like for me, sometimes with the painting, it's like I'll come in and I'll just be like, and that'll be what that's my painting for the day. You know, that's me working on my painting.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, people will like talk themselves out of that being like a valid experience to have with themselves, 'cause I think they think that's like what a narcissist does, or like what an egotistical person does, is always just like, oh man, I really nailed that. Like, I'm just so good at this. But I mean, I don't know where a lot of like, the inner dialogue of like a, hopefully I don't, like the inner dialogue of a psychopath is, but
you don't, 'cause you're not one.
Well, I'll have to figure that out some other time. But I think that a lot of people talk themselves out of being on their own team and being like, you did it, you crushed it, that's great. I was in a relationship where I was trying to figure out, how did I let that person in? Like, how did that person make sense to me? And then I realized that all of the stuff that he would say about me or make me feel, the only other person in my circle that was like that was me.
Mm.
I was like, shit, that's how that happened. Mm-hmm. And then I mean, that point of recognition, that final boss brought me around to being like, no one's going to talk to me like that. I'm not going to talk to me like that. And part of the ways that you have to talk to yourself when you're making artwork is, that's okay. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a mistake. That's a directive. That material can't do that. You start with what you can't do sometimes. Like I work on different surfaces, and sometimes if I make a mistake on that surface, I cannot erase that mistake. So I have to incorporate it. Like if I'm teaching someone how to center a pot and it's off center, everything you do past that is going to be revealed, you know, as incorrect. But it's a directive for what that pot actually wants to be shaped like, for what you and that clay did. I mean, it doesn't have to be centered to be a vessel, and it doesn't even have to be a vessel to be what you did that day. And honestly, that, I mean, one of my favorite things about that particular job is like they get to just like smash stuff and throw away the clay, which all gets recycled, which is a really relieving part for them, is that like, you're not wasting anything here. That's my favorite part of being like, you can run through this. You can run through this clay that we've allotted you because we figured out how to make it okay. You're not wasting anything here.
Oh my gosh.
And that to me is like, what I'm learning is, what do people need to hear ahead of time so they can dismantle all of their speed bumps, mm-hmm. of saying another person is going to do this because another person knows what to do with this material. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what to do with any material. It's the material that tells me like there's a little less Sam here and a little more this here. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, so do I like it? Do I want to stop? Do I want to come back to it later? I mean, you don't know what you're going to get, and you still have to do it because only you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Sam, speaking of your artistry and what it is that you do, I know that right now you're working with clay and you're working at a clay studio, and you've mentioned that that's really a departure for you. And so I'd like for you to let everybody know, like, what is your preferred medium of work, and what are your thoughts on working with different modalities and different materials, and what is your preferred method as an artist?
Yeah, I definitely work firsthand with painting and sculpture. I like working in little multiples. I make little multiples of things, and I don't necessarily know where they're going to add up. You know, I just imagine I'll do something with them later. And I have had great opportunity to have a lot of materials bestowed upon me. Right now I'm sitting on top of a lot of stained glass that I get to work with at some point. And that's, you know, to switch it up and to cross train, like I said, to be able to take a new material and work on that a little bit further, go outside of my natural wheelhouse, works for me. Don't know if that answered your question.
You know, that kind of brings me to another question. What is your favorite expression of art? And I know for you, it's hard to narrow that down because everything is art and everything can be art, especially from a certain viewpoint. But like, I think in terms of traditional artistic expressions, what's your preferred form?
I think like as a audience member, as a content absorber, a consumer, stand up to me is like the highest form of artistry. It works on like existential to like physical levels in just the weirdest ways. I would push myself into that realm too. Because I do, like, honestly, I think that language and articulation is one of the first ways that I started manipulating materials. You can spellbind someone with what you say and they become your material. And that's good witch, bad witch stuff, you know? And in my own form of like, what materials do I love to wield? I'm naturally really more of an additive person than a deductive person. So I like to take something from the background into the foreground, so to speak. I can't really start without taking something and adulterating the purity of it. I want to like change what it started with and move it on.
Amazing.
Do you teach anywhere? Like, can people work with you? And also, like, how can we find you? Like, how can people stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so I work at Bear Clay Studio in Columbus, Ohio, as an instructor. That's not my business, but that is my employment right now, and I love it. I get to instruct people on very like basic introductory. Coursework on ceramics, and then that's mostly the wheel and hand building. And then I do sorry.
do.
I just saw Tyler the Creator start laughing at I think Neil deGrasse Tyson saying do, and I just did it to myself. I'm so sorry.
Okay, I do that all the time.
It's That's okay. exactly oh, why also- I run out of time is saying stupid stuff like that. I currently instruct introductory ceramics courses at a studio in Columbus, Ohio, and my goals for the future are to open up my own studio where I have a really diverse mix of materials and I can just fly through them with people in either private or shared sessions so that they can get a little taste of having access in a safe place to, you know, bring something from the inside out and destroy it at the end if they want to, and keep it if they'd love to. I can be found on Instagram under sgiesige, sgiesige. And also my website is squarespace.sgiesige.com.
Amazing. Sam, you're so cool.
You guys are way awesome.
Aw. No, you.
Thank you. You did so good. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much.
Sam.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks, everyone.
Wait, we're going to do the outro and then you say bye to us. I'm the giggles.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Heart of Healing Show and for navigating this conversation about art therapy as a modality with the wonderful artist and my dear friend, Sam. Please tune in for the after show. Follow her. If you're in Columbus, take a class with her and let us know what you thought of the episode. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this episode.
We hope you gained some valuable insight and maybe learned something new.
If you enjoyed the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. And don't forget to follow us on social media at The Heart of Healing Show.
Till next time.
Mwah.